noticed about most people's brains is that when you work with people's minds, especially if you've noticed, like the stuff I was telling you yesterday about trance, that computers see. People always talk about computer error or human error. It really doesn't work that way. Computers do exactly what you tell them to do. The problem is you don't always tell them what you tell them what you say, not necessarily what you mean. And people, a lot of times, when they're programming their mind, do the same thing. I mean, it's like when somebody is in a situation like when I was flying out here, I don't know what it is, but now that they have these upgrades, you get a whole new class of people in first class. I couldn't believe it. When they started, the engines began to roll out, I felt like I was in Fear Center USA. Because, I mean, it was like suddenly there I was. I felt like I was on one of these flying phobic tours they have now. They have this thing in San Francisco where you go and you take this six-week class, and at the end of the class, they take you up and fly you around. The airlines actually put these on. They're phobia classes. And, of course, since they don't know anything about phobias, they have people do things like they have them chant this mantra. And listen to this mantra. It's like, don't be afraid. The plane is not going to crash. You can't get hurt in a plane. You're more apt to have an accident in a car. Right? Now, what a set of suggestions, if you think about it, right? It's like, people, if they have a safe flight, have to crash their car on the way home. I mean, it's really, when I listen to these people going through it, and they're all sitting there going, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. Pretty soon I started getting nervous, you know. Like, you people, shut up. But see, it's not that they want to be afraid, it's that they don't know anything about the programming of the human mind. You know, it's like, when I did a thing where I was working with people on stage fright last year at the trainer's training. It's amazingly enough, some of these people that go to the trainer's training, a lot of them go not because they want to train people in NLP, but they're really there for the platform skills, which is what I consider to, this is where you really put people to the litmus test, is to have me in the audience. Well, I figure I should provide them all the worst experiences imaginable, so it will be all downhill from there. And since I've taught as much as I have, I know every cruel thing you can do to a trainer. But when they do their first thing, when they first get up, I have them get up with me. And we do a little thing where I teach them tempo and tonality and stuff. But some of them are so frightened they can't speak. And so you have to do something with their fears. And I started asking last year some of the people, like, what do they do when they think about an audience? And they would do things like the night before, they knew they had to talk. And so they go, well, last night, you know, I worked myself into a frenzy. And whenever somebody says somebody like that, I know you're headed for high comedy. And, I mean, this is one of the things about disassociating and not identifying with your clients, is because until they can find what they do silly, they're going to keep doing it. And, I mean, it's not until when they're describing it to you, they almost hit embarrassment. In fact, typically I like to embarrass them once and anchor it. Because one of the things about being embarrassed is it is one of the forms of unfamiliarness that allows people to escape their traditional ways that they act. Because it's some people can go up and be terribly nervous in front of an audience because it's familiar. But it's not so much the audience part that you want. You want it to be unfamiliar for them to work themselves into the frenzy. I mean, one of the people there, I love this, as they laid down before they went to sleep the night before, they started by saying, okay, I have to get some sleep or I'll make a fool of myself tomorrow. You know, and I don't want to be nervous tomorrow. Right. Now, if you think about the hypnagogic state that you go into just before you drop off to sleep, it's a little bit like the trances you were in yesterday, isn't it? Right? Now, so if you go into a mild trance and start giving yourself post-hypnotic suggestions that, you know, that you're going to be nervous and you're going, you know, and you can phrase them as negation, but this person, I love what they did, as they would do it, they would picture themselves on the very stage that they were going to work on, right? Freezing up, beads of sweat stepping off of them. Then they'd step inside the image and feel how bad that would be and say to themselves, don't do this. Now, I don't know about you guys, but this doesn't strike me as the approach that we want people to do. I mean, for me, the thing I'm trying to do is to get people to step into the future in a way that adds resources, that as they, you know, as people concentrate on being more ferocious and concentrate, I'm paying attention to the sensory cues on the outside. Because most of the fears, the anxieties, and the things happen are where when people get into a situation, they go internal instead of external. So to add to the dimension, because I want to go back to what we didn't finish up yesterday, is by juxtaposing, you know, good choices in the future or going back and having it be excruciatingly unfamiliar and also ridiculous. And I mean, to me, part of the reason I want to take things to extreme, to the point where I can get my clients laughing, is because I also want to stack on top of the unpleasant anchor ludicrousness. I mean, so, I mean, when, even with clients, like I saw this marvelous couple down in Orlando, and their thing was is that they had a good marriage and that they were mostly happy except when they fought. And I asked them, I said, well, how much time do you spend fighting? Because if you only do it once every 3 years, you know, it's really not that bad, you know, just when it starts, leave for a day or something, you know. And they said, well, no, we fight every day at breakfast, but we don't fight in the evening. And I said, maybe you guys shouldn't have breakfast. Maybe you're a little cranky in the morning. And they said, no, because we get up earlier. It's just that when we sit at the breakfast table. And literally, they ate dinner at a different table, right? Because so I told them to have breakfast at the other table. Throw that table away. Said it must be the table's fault. But actually, what they did at the beginning of the day, they both had a thing that and they both did it too. And I don't know how they programmed each other to do this, and it doesn't matter. But they got up, when they sat down at breakfast, they would make pictures of all the things that the other one didn't do that they had talked about doing. And then they'd start to fight about it, and then they'd make promises that they didn't mean to keep to each other, just to get the other one to shut up, right? Which, of course, then fed into the next day. It's kind of a nice recursive sort of loop, if you want to get up in the morning and torture your mate, anyway. Me, I don't think fighting in the morning is a good idea. But it does kind of wake you up a little bit, get the blood moving. But I typically, if I'm going to argue with people, like to pick strangers just randomly on the street, go yell at them. You know, that way I don't have to ever see them again. I always thank them after. Oh, thank you very much. I feel better now. They go, what was that about? And, never mind. It's none of your business. But you were yelling at me. It has nothing to do with you. You were just the lucky one this morning. Now, one of the things that I'd like to do is I'd like you to think in terms of exaggeration, that when you take things to extremes, that you're really trying to build for yourself the two anchors that you want to establish here. You want an anchor that goes past, and again, it's going to amplify. Let's get out and spell this. Don't spell in the morning. My pictures are too clear and bright. It hurts my eyes. Go in and look at those bright words. I think I should switch to a black background, don't you? That'd be easier. Of course, then it might be too dark to go in there, I'll fall back asleep. Just pull the shades down over the letters, and off you go. Now, on the other side, again, you want to be able to hook this with the future. And one of the things that I find useful is paying attention to how somebody's timeline is organized. Because people who have the future straight out in front of them and the past in the back, one of the things that I have a tendency to do is to anchor them on the shoulder with the positive thumb. I'll have a tendency to move up and anchor them like this so that as they look over their shoulder, they get the future good stuff. So that, again, I reverse so that the future is in there, and then if they look into the future, they get the good stuff, or they look and they see the past. Because especially with people that have their past behind them, these are people who have a tendency to repeat mistakes. Whenever people put the past where they can't see it very well, they have to turn around and look at it or pull things out with great difficulty. One of the things that you want to be able to do is to take the past anchor and to be able to put it wherever the future is so that they would look at it. With some people, if it goes straight out, you have to anchor them here. And I will. I mean, I'll literally walk up and make an anchor like that. It's as plain as the nose on your face. See what I mean? So that if they have a tendency to go into the past behavior, it has them look at the future on their timeline so that you can orient them that way. Now, the one thing that I'd like you to do, because I'd like you to go back with your partner, and we'll just do this one little ending piece here before we move on to other ludicrous and strange things, is that at this point, one of the things is I don't know how much content you have about what you're doing, but you have, given that we did similar things, you should have enough content that you can begin to exaggerate. Now, there's another form of sliding anchor that I want you to learn to form. That not only do you anchor on them kinesthetically as you go back into the past thing, but you're doing your amplification with volume of your voice and with pitch in your voice. So that as you become louder and as the pitch of your voice goes higher with the negative anchor, right? And the same thing with the positive anchor. It's like, you know, do you really want to enjoy yourself and have a good time? Nah, probably not. You'd rather feel this. And it not yet, Robert. I'll tell you when. It's like, okay, unconscious mind's ready. Put him in trance. It's too early. You have to stay in the waking state in the morning. Just for a while. I'll let you know when. That as you do it. Now, you also want to be able to give yourself some movement room. That a lot of people get stuck in their chair, especially in their office. I mean, it's like somebody put that, you know, super glue in their chair. They figure they can't move. You want to be able to move because you want to think in terms of the submodalities that you elicited earlier. Remember when you were eliciting the submodalities from your partner of all these different things we've been working with? Did you notice that there are certain things like distance that are powerful variables? Now, the thing is that if you think about in your mind, just kind of scan over the stuff that you elicited yesterday from them, things about size, distance, volume, pressure, all the different submodalities, inside there'll be ones that are really kind of kickers. And one of the ones I find that's commonly a kicker with most people, of course, is distance. So one of the things I do is I watch where they focus their eyes. When I have them think about, I go, well, now, when you think about going back and doing it just the way you did it before, you remember what it was like. Think about it for a minute. I go, and I watch where they focus their eyes in space. If you watch where eyes look, you can tell if I'm looking at the wall, if I'm looking here in space, or if I'm looking really close. You can tell by head tilt. You can tell by where the eyes. As soon as I notice where they put it, right, now I have the ability to amplify it, right? Because as soon as they look there, I anchor it with my hand spatially, right? So as I move away from that space, I cut my hand back, and as I move up, I open it up. Whenever you want to create a flat surface, you cup your hand round, and you come up and move away from it. When you want a curved surface, you start with your hand flat. What? Again. Well, if you want a curved surface, if you want to create in space a curved surface, you do it with difference. You start with a flat hand and you make a curved surface. So if we're talking with pictures that are flat, right, as you know, as opposed to a cattle shocker, that to create this, to it's a little motivation there. Paying attention clearly this time. It's just an anchor, that's all. Well, see, the thing is that for me, that part, that when you're communicating with somebody, you know, that a lot of people get lost in the words. They don't realize your behavior. Everything you do is an anchor. And that, to me, that part of the reason of understanding submodalities is not just so you can talk the client to death with them, but so that you can utilize them. And part of that requires that, well, it is. I mean, you know, some people are all theory, no practice. Believe me. I heard a tape on submodalities that I won't name the trainer, but that this trainer made, who has, as far as I know, never taken a course from me, and as far as I know, never taken a course from you guys. And their understanding of submodalities, for example, they didn't have any kinesthetic submodalities, which, given my memory of them, fits. And, in fact, their description of the submodalities, if you listen to the description, it was a description of this guy. But he assumed that, of course, everybody had that submodalities the same way he is. For example, when he was talking about things on the tape, he was talking about things you believe strongly, and the picture is big and bright and right in front of your face to the point where you can barely see it. And that's of course, this is true for everyone. This is where, because, see, according to him, submodalities were fixed. There were certain universals, like, now, if you think about your beliefs being in front of you and you can't see them, that pretty much sums this guy up in a nutshell. That's it. If you're going to think about it, if you can get strenuous, okay, I'll go back and go. Stipulation about people now. Try to go back and feel the way that you are. They go, I don't want to feel the way. you know, and they go, oh, okay, I guess I can try and go back and have those feelings. Whereas 15 minutes before, they had no alternative but to feel that way. As you grab a hold of something, and you go, you can feel that way. As you make your tone of voice sound that way, then you have to do is repeat tone, and you go, because you know how good it felt to be free of it, don't you? Right? Ah, zzz. And see, so you actually create tonal anchors, but by the same token, you notice where that picture is. Now, the thing is because you can literally, without saying anything to a client, because, you know, if you want your picture to be bright, you know, you can make them bigger. And I mean, literally, I go, you know, do you want more of this in your life? Yes, so, huh? Now, this is the kind of thing that literally, you don't have to say make your picture bigger. Make it bigger, right? You know where it is if you say, and think about how this good choice is going to be, and they focus their eyes right here, go. They'll go. How does that feel? You know, now, you can either be happy or you can be stuck. What's it going to be? You know, now, as you use your tone of voice, to create it, to make it more difficult, as you exaggerate, take the content, you know, because you can, and go back to the exercise, because you remember where, because, you know, with the client you didn't like, how you got to have lunch with them, have them wait on you at the bank. You remember how it was like, because that's really how you want to live life, isn't it? Take a look at it. You want to feel that way? Or, on the other hand, perhaps you might look at things differently. Now, because as you create, because remember, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to go back and forth. Now, you don't want to collapse these anchors. Every time you go back and forth, you want to exaggerate each one. Then, as soon as you can get, because what you want to do is to get the powerful one, the strong one, to be the basis of going into the future. Right? Now, again, kinesthetically, instead of just having them shut their eyes, we're trying to integrate this into conscious experience now. Now we're trying to get a hold of these things, this positive picture, and show somebody how much better it can be, right? So that they'll learn to live this way always. And feel this would be useful. Now, right. Now, that's one of the things that you can't do sitting down calmly with your hands folded over your lap. You like it. You'll know you're getting places with clients when they start doing what Robert did yesterday and what you just did when they go, right? This is a good response. This is where we know that they're invigorated, because to me, they're invigorated and they're not just in a deep trance. We've gone through the deep trance phase. Now we're starting to really alter the conscious and unconscious things and get them aligned. Because one of the things that I try to emphasize is I don't want conflict. I don't want parts. I want a lined up person. I want everything going in the same direction. I don't want ecology. I want something good. You know, ecology is like peace between warring neighbors, right? Submodalities has ecology built into it in the sense that it eliminates parts. It takes the entire concept of anthropomorphism, because parts is anthropomorphized. It gets too spooky. I mean, you can take somebody and hypnotize them and make them a multiple personality. But just short of that is the reframing model. We're trying to make our work better now, which is the sense that what we do is we get the conscious and unconscious processes lined up to go in the same direction, to head towards having a positive future. Now, as you oscillate back and forth between this kind of activity and this kind of activity, listen to my tone of voice, using different tones. Now, we want to switch now from this point to not only using the visual components we know about, but from switching to using my auditory to using her internal auditory, right? You know, I mean, you know, we want to begin to hear trumpets going off when she thinks about doing it, when she looks at a client, right? We want her to look at the client that comes in that would have been a problem. Again, always stack presuppositions in your language. Use your language so that it works for you, right? Listen to yourself talk. Don't plan what you're going to say. Listen to the words as they come out of your mouth. Because if you say something and you afterwards you go, ooh, that wasn't good, keep talking, right? Because you can always turn it around. That's one of the nice things about scope ambiguity. Now, isn't it useful? Oh, yeah, that's what he meant. Does it become clearer and clearer and clearing up now? Isn't that useful? to have left behind you, or to move into the future. Tense. As you look into the past. Now, the next thing we want to do is to have her stop and think about, because as you look at that client, what you want to begin to do is to hear trumpets behind you, or your own voice saying, go get them, right? Either that, or you want a whiny little snivelly voice that comes swooping up from right here that goes, you don't have to do this. You can have lunch and dinner with them. In fact, you can marry them. Think about it. Can you feel this? Good. Now, of course, it's up to you. I mean, you know, you can either marry them and be miserable for years and have a little whiny voice. In fact, it can start to sound like a dental drill. You know what I mean? That's right. Or you can get the big picture about having fun with it, enjoyment, and hear those trumpets coming from behind you. Da-da-da-da, here I come, rock and roll. Life can be good. Your ass is mine. All of those things coming inside of your head, so when you look at clients, you broaden your horizon, so to speak, and the sound gets louder and louder till it begins to send shivers of pleasure that start from right here. And you feel this would be useful in the future every time you encounter somebody like that. Or on the other hand, you could just feel your teeth. Now, of course, again, I like to use subtle examples for these things. I like to rummage through my... See, this way, you know, you get to rummage through all of the weird experiences you had in your life and do them to people for their own good. Any sound that's ever given you the shivers now becomes a resource for others. See, I catalog these things, you know. As I drive down the road, that's when I do it. I look over and I go, the dentist office. Ooh. Right. Write that one down, you know. Think about things like, you know that little sound a needle makes when they just before they zap you with stuff, where they squirt the stuff out of the top of it? Right? Get my point? She's sitting behind her. I'm getting her as good as... Should see that the camera was going in this direction. I got a line moving this way. That's right. Okay, now, what I want you to do is I want you to get your partner. And this is the point where, again, when you go into state, when you do NLP, you don't just go into one. For me, there are phases of what you're doing. And when I'm getting to the point where I'm doing things in the integration, I go out of that, you know, I'm just going to kick your ass phase into I'm going to tickle every nerve in your body. I'm going to have some fun. Because now it's time, you've gotten to the point where somebody has a sense of humor. Right? When you ask somebody, go, well, you're going to go back and be a wimp? What's it going to be? We see which way she looks. That's how you test your work. You go, because it could be this. Embed everything you can. Right? It's like... Because you want to make it so that when she even thinks, because before doing that behavior was normal to her, but now you want it to be a threat, right? You know, you want it if she even looks over at that and even considers that as an alternative. So when the client comes in and starts to generate that behavior, instead of going into a want and fun NLP place, her teeth will hurt. Can you feel this coming? Of course, it's your future, your teeth. Which is it going to be? That's the kind of response you're looking for, because you're looking for taking the natural processes. People are not just moving away, people are moving towards. They do both. You move away from something and towards something else. And you want them moving away from their past and towards the future. Doesn't that make sense? You know how many people have organized their life so they're moving away from the future? I mean, consider the clients you get in. How many of them immediately, as soon as you ask a question, go to the past? I mean, I get this all the time. I mean, somebody walks in, and I go, what's your problem? They go, well, when I was 5 years old. And I go, well, how old are you? And they go, well, 47. And I go, then what the hell are you sniveling about when you were 5 years old? And they go, well, that's what makes me the way I am now. And I go, well, you wore diapers when you were two. You don't wear diapers now, do you? And they go, well, that's not the same thing. And I go, want to bet? If you're going to snivel about this, you're going to find yourself out in public in diapers. Wouldn't that be embarrassing? And when they get embarrassed, I anchor it. And I go, now, tell me about being five. And whack, slam off the anchor. Because I want them to feel, you know, that sniveling about when they were a child is as embarrassing as walking out in diapers. I mean, to me, I don't want them to feel like they want to go into the past. I want it to feel unfamiliar. I want it to feel strange. I want them to head towards the future. Because your past doesn't make you who you are. It is the basis of who you are. It doesn't control. Just because you were beaten up as a child doesn't mean you have to be sniveling now. But it's all you learned. But it's not what happens to you. It's what you make out of it. Some people who were beaten up as childs become real badass motherfuckers. And some become afraid of everything, afraid of their own shadow, you know, and everything in between. So the trick is to go back and take your past and make a new future, one that pleases you, one that you can do something with, one that's more ferocious. Now, for yourself right now, it's like the thing that you need to do as preparation, because whenever you're doing NLP, you're not only working with other people, you're using yourself like an instrument. And you've got to keep track of your state, not all the time, but from time to time, as you move into a new behavior, like, you know, when you're ready for the, because this is the phase at which I stand up. It's when clients know I'm going to kick their ass real bad. Anybody, I've had clients that I've seen like once, you know, and then maybe 3 or 4 years later, I've seen them again. And stuff. They get to the point where when I stand up, they wince already. You know, they cover their knees, stuff like this. I go, that won't help, you know. They go, I know, please. Hurry up, get it over with. Make me feel good. And then bad, and then good, and then bad. I promise I'll never feel bad again if you do this. All right, if you promise to live in a state of ecstasy, I'll leave you alone, but otherwise I won't. What's it gonna be? Which one? How do you wanna live? I don't know. Well, guess! See, I know where these ministers got this stuff about slapping people on the head. Because when you can grab a hold of a picture and go, feel this, whack, you know. It's a religious experience, isn't it? Hey, they were out there. One guy was sitting by there, and he started looking at the pictures in his head, and he went, if I took one of those and smacked somebody in the head with it, they'd see God right now. They go, see Jesus? Put Jesus up here. Can you see him? Whack, you know. Holy God, you feel Jesus now? Praise the Lord. But I'm Jewish. Does that mean I have to get killed? Well, now that you have your sense of humor about you, lock on to that feeling. Because your sense of humor is what's going to make it so you can do this. You must take as a presupposition that what they have been doing in their life is absurd. If it is not bringing them wealth, ecstasy, and happiness all at the same time, it's got to be pretty absurd. You know, I mean, certainly, if they're continuing to do it after it's over. I mean, I know people that had a bad marriage, right? But it was over 10 years ago, right? But they're still in it. They're still, the other person is gone, so they're having the arguments in their head without the other person. Think about it. Is that not stupid? Right. Now, you can think of that as too bad, or you can think of that as totally ludicrous, right? I mean, as if once wasn't bad enough, they're going to do it without the person. And I mean, right down to the thing where if somebody is raped, right, and after it's over with, every night, they get themselves raped again. Now, it's a bad thing, but if you can use, like, three-play disassociation to remove the bad feeling, you know, get a little amnesia, for them to continue to do it. And I mean, if they can get to the point where they can understand that the other person isn't doing it every night, now they are. That's when they get to run their own brain. Instead of sitting around having wonderful sexual fantasies about how they could have better things in the future than some idiot jumping them in an alley, instead they're jumping themselves in an alley every night, which is not the foundation for a future good love life. You know, I mean, before you go out on a date with a guy, you imagine getting raped in an alley. I mean, that'll give you a good evening, huh? You'll walk up to him and say something real sexy like, fuck you! You know? I mean, it's just, you know, it's not useful. I mean, it's too bad bad stuff happens to us. But it's even more too bad and even more ludicrous that we continue to do it to ourselves. To set people free from, you know, I mean, some people have one unpleasant experience and center their life around it. You know, and I mean, to me, you know, at least, you know, they should take one wonderful experience and center their life around it. It's like, what would you rather have? Would you rather feel good or would you rather feel bad? Which do you want? You know, and when you begin to treat clients that way, they, what you're doing is focusing for them what's really going on. And one of the things is, as much as I've heard therapists for years talk about honesty, they're the most dishonest people I've ever met. They talk about taking risks. They're the worst risk takers I've ever seen. Because when it comes to telling clients stuff, in order to tell them, I mean, you know, to tell them that what they're doing is dumb, stop it. Now, it's not enough to just say it, but even if you say it, you can then begin to get the idea of what it takes for people to focus in on it. Because if you can dissipate overwhelming bad feelings, right, and then go, look, we can make them overwhelming again. You did it once before. We can make them go back. We can make it so that it feels just like sitting in a dental chair. I mean, right down to when that drill hits the nerve, you know, that sound that it makes inside your head where the jawbones start to pop and stuff. You get that little trembling up your cheeks, right? Because when you see those clients coming in, you know, and you start to go back into those old behaviors, it's right, suddenly you'll begin to feel that on the side of your cheekbones. And you go, I could live this way. But if I do it with one client, I have to live this way my whole life. All day, all night. I have to find somebody just like this and marry them. Or, on the other hemisphere, perhaps you could see a bigger picture. That you could begin to look at things in a way that gave you other choices, so to speak. But I don't know, it's up to you. Or, you know, you could just oscillate back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Stay confused, stay confused. But if you do that, then this comes closer, closer. Depends upon which one you want. Now, I love visual anchors. Visual anchors are really fun. They give you the opportunity to now really throw the ball in the client's court. See, once you give people the resources, then you also got to tell them, it doesn't happen to them. Too many people think that they come in and they go, hypnotize me and change me. And I just go, no, that's too easy. You don't deserve that. I said, you have to earn that from me. You have to go out and kick the shit out of your own problem first. I'll give you the basis to do it, but you've got to actively participate in your own life. One of the reasons that, even though I do it to them, I won't tell them I did. I won't give them the satisfaction of knowing, because I still want them, above and beyond whatever change they make, to get actively involved in their own life, actively involved in running their own brain. I mean, if you think about the degree to which people don't, the reason they want you to come in and just hypnotize me and make the problem go away is because that's what's the reason the problem is there, is because it mysteriously has been controlling their life. And the missing piece is their active participation, right? You know, people tell me, well, you know, I want to stop getting angry all the time, you know. And I go, yeah, well, stop it. And they go, well, it's not me doing it. I just get angry. And when, as soon as you hear that word just, you know you're at the limits of the fudge factor. You're about to hear the fudge factor and the finagle phenomenon par excellence. And what are they fudging out of and what they're finagling out of is participation in their own life. You know, it's like, you know, I wasn't myself. I lost my temper. Massive disassociation. It's the same thing we talked about yesterday when Michael was talking about the stuff with people taking, with that their drug experiences or their alcohol experiences don't count. It's not a part of their life. They don't think, I'm a person who drank too much and beat up my wife. They'll literally say, it was the booze talking. Have you ever heard somebody say that? What a stupid statement. Booze doesn't talk. Except sometimes. Calls out to you out of the bottle. And goes, Richard, I'm in here. I need to get out. But other than that. Now, but when you start, you know, but when you start taking a client like that, when you get them to this point and you go, like you can feel it next time the booze is in your veins, you'll hear it screaming, but it'll be muffled because veins are small. It'll be going, hit her, hit her. Hit her! Hit her! Right. And you can feel it coming up your arm. It'll go, hit her! Hit her! Hit her! Hit her! But it course, why do you do it up their arm that way? You got to think every moment while you do this, because it's moving away from the hand. But you don't want him to hit her, right? If it's going to hit anything, you get up to here. Well, I figure when I'm working with people, I get to do what I want. And see, the thing is that as you begin to take this extreme behavior of disassociation, it's the booze talking. This is why in the beginning of sessions, I really perk up my ears for the stupid things that people say, because I'm going to save them. I always want to use them right away. It's my tendency to just want to shove it down your throat. But I know how much more fun I'm going to have if I wait, right? Because if I take the really dumb things that people say, well, like it was the booze talking, those great little idiomatic statements, save them to the end, you know, then, I mean, literally, you know, you can go, you see the bottle here, and it's screaming out of the bottle, drink me. But, of course, if it does, then you'll shrink, and you know where, too. Booze, sex. Booze, sex. It's up to you. Choose. Hey, push it to the limits, man. Go for the throat at this point. Because this is exactly what's going on in their life. They are choosing, and you want it to become a magnanimous choice. One that's fairly obvious which direction they're going to go in, a positive future or a shitty future. What's it going to be? But that's what it boils down to. Now, by creating such massive things, the nice thing that you're doing is you're not creating a polarity. You're not separating out parts. You are putting them in the position of making a decision about their life. These are two processes that they do, not two different things doing two different things. It forces association. It, in essence, takes both behaviors and rams them into the same bottle, so to speak. So that what happens is they are in the position of choosing which one they are going to do at any moment in time. But it's all them actively doing it and actively choosing. Now, the thing about submodalities, if you remember before anybody taught you about it, you were doing it, weren't you? It's like, but when somebody said, well, some of these pictures are bigger than other ones. Some are on the right, some is on the left. And you went, damn, look at that. Said, pick a strong belief, and you went, pick a weak belief, and you went like this, and you went, shit, man, one is over there and one is over there. Ain't that weird? Right? But you were doing it anyway. Now, the thing is since you're doing it either as out of consciousness or whatever, the fact is that your clients are participating in their life, but just like, you know, all the stuff that's going on and the voices and stuff, even though it's sorted out to keep it separate, they don't know how it's sorted, right? And, of course, if they don't know how it's sorted, when they're making decisions that drive them back into old behaviors, right? I mean, think about it. If you have automatic access in you, if you talk to yourself and a certain bad decision is automatically there, you don't have the choice of pushing it away. The lady on the Marshall University tapes, I mean, you know, making pictures of people getting in accidents and their bones sticking out through the skin. And the later and later they were for an appointment, the bigger these pictures got and the closer they got. Now, that's pretty stupid. You know, I mean, if you're going to wait for somebody, I mean, there's no reason to sit and scare the shit out of yourself. But she had learned to do this, and she wasn't totally cognizant. Even though she did it, it wasn't an active process that she participated in. It happened to her. It was just an automatic loop that had been built. Now, once I got her to actively participate in it, then, of course, I turn around and start ramming it down her throat. I go, go ahead, scare the shit out of yourself. And she goes, well, I don't want to. And I go, well, do it anyway. Right? Because this is what makes it so that she is doing it. I don't want it to disappear mysteriously, as much as it did anyway. You know, she sat around, she thought about scaring herself, but she fell asleep. People are late, you go unconscious. It's a better choice than scaring the hell out of yourself. She got tired of having to go through all the mental processes that wore her out, so she went to sleep. It's a better, you know, if you're tired, that's the best thing to do. I mean, you know, some people lay a bit, like insomniacs, I love them. They lay in bed at night and scare themselves about whether they'll be able to sleep or not. They go, well, I'm probably not going to be able to sleep. I'll stay up and I'll be too tired in the morning, right? It's a great suggestion to give yourself. Stay awake all night and be too tired in the morning. That way you get tired all day and awake all night, right? Now, it seems to me there's a simple cure. Sleep all day and stay up all night. Works for me. Okay, what I want you to do is now go get your partner. Remember to put yourself in the state. Go back and remember times where you had a good sense of humor and times where you were ferociously lively. You know, go back to the party days, right? Get into that attitude. Remember, as you talk to somebody, you're using your tone and tempo very methodically. You're using space very methodically. That, you know, as you create a space, you're watching their accessing cues, because as you begin, start out very slowly talking about what you did yesterday, general conversation, you know, and it's the do you remember question that forces them to access. You know, do you remember, you know, what it was like when you first stopped and, you know, thought about the client, you know, that was tough, the things you did where you hesitated. Do you remember what that was, underlined, like? Keep your presuppositions in order. Talk about what's past as past. And now that you know how you're going to be and how delightful it's going to feel. And remember, you're in essence, want to jump mildly back into the altered state. Enough of an altered state. Now, the other thing is as you broaden a picture in front of somebody, it induces an altered state. It's a rapid change in submodalities. Remember, when you do any rapid, isn't it? So it's a good time to give suggestions like pleasure, you know, spreading, now, right, now. So that whenever you move a submodality rapidly like that, throw in a suggestion. And you want the pleasure to be connected and to spread throughout them so that as you look into the future, you feel that. So you literally can use sound. Now, the other thing I want you to do, experiment a little bit with, is seeing how many pleasant sounds you can put in, motivating voices. And remember, now we're building. You don't have to use ones that are already there. Make you new ones, trumpets, dramatic things that, you know, as they look at the client, they can, you know, that uplifting Rocky theme music stuff, you know, dun, 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 that kind of stuff. Anything that's uplifting so that, and have it triggered off by the kind of clients, the whining tonality. Anything where they'd hesitate, where they aren't experimental, where they wouldn't take the kind of things you're learning here and use it, where maybe a client would get mad, you know, who cares, right? Make my day, you know. Because, you know, and especially those of you, like, you know, if you have a client, because sometimes I get these guys that are like 6'6", they're gigantic, you know, and, you know. So they decide rather than, you know, have their life turn into ecstasy, they're going to fight me on shit, you know. And, I mean, I've even had ones where they'll stand up and go, and when they do that, I go, impotent! And I go, sit down or you will stay that way. And as they sit down, I go, twice as sexually powerful. Now, are you going to fight me on this? Say, as long as you have a sense of humor about it, because you have to keep in mind, you don't have to live the way they live. Right? They came here to make their life better. Right? Now, if they want to stay with their life cruddy, laugh at them for it and go, look, if you want your life to be as big a mess as it was, in fact, I'll make it worse for you if you want me to. You know? And this is one of the things that keeps you from connecting it to your own feelings, is just really realizing when you're a neuro-linguistic programmer, you can make it better or worse. And it's whichever they want, you know? You can give them this or you can give them this. You know? It's up to you. How do you want to live? And that the essence of what you're trying to do is to convey that to them, so that they drive their own bus in the end. But they ain't going to drive their own bus till they take control, and they ain't going to take control if they'll let you do it. And part of the fluctuation of going back and forth is to get them to shift to the point where they do it. And at least if you're not there, they'll be able to drive their bus. Minimally. But some of them literally wipe pictures out. I've seen people do this shit. That they'll take the negative picture over there, and they'll just go. You know, you see people do that, where they rub their pictures out. Those are the people that have blackboards in their minds. Some people have photographs, and then they're archival. They're stuck with them forever, unless they burn them. Shh. You feel that? The heat? It's just a way of changing people. Okay, grab your partner. Take about 15 minutes apiece. Remember, this is something you're doing, building up to a crescendo. So don't start out screaming, work your way up. You don't have to get loud, you have to get solid in your voice. It's not so much that you scream loudly, because if you do, you'll disjunk their consciousness. It's not so much volume as a solid, rich tone. And if you have any problem with that, pull your chin back and lower your hip, and you'll feel your voice is twice as solid. You're speaking from your diaphragm. When you hit low tones, they should rumble. Have that. You should feel the rumbling right here. You know what I mean? Robert knows about this. Go get him. Zzz. I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the advantages of doing this kind of stuff, especially for those of you who are seeing clients on a regular basis. One of the things that I do after a session like this is I get clients, you know, and not so much me, but I know that a lot of the people I've trained with who see clients more regularly than I do, I give them a lot of homework where I have them come up with things that they want to make better. And I give them typically a generative system. But if you see clients on a regular basis, assign them homework to find things in their life that they enjoy, that they want to make ecstatic, so that when they come back, they've spent the week searching for what can be better, as opposed for searching for what's wrong. Because remember again, the thing about perceptual grids is that now that we've gotten a person at this point in time to start aiming, I mean, instead of a salesman, you know, even if I do sales training, I want salesmen to look for how they can increase the percentage of close, what people they can have more fun with selling to, so that instead of having to see more people to prospect more to make more money, they can increase the number of closes so that a wider range of people become fodder for their success. And with clients, you want to gauge them so that when they come back, they found other things in their life that they want to feel better. That they found, instead of looking for what's wrong in their life, they're going to start looking for what works in their life and doing it more. Because we want to switch the whole grid over from, you know, what's wrong with life, you know, from operating out of the grid of a pessimist to operating out of the grid of a wanton and total hedonist. That as they begin to make that shift, not just in their own life, but in the lives especially of those around them, that, you know, start thinking about things that they can do to increase the pleasure in the people around them. Because as they put a smile on people's face for no reason, it's just going to make them easier to be around and more fun to be around. I mean, so that as you move through second and third sessions, you begin to get to more generative change. You know, if you have clients which are married or in a coupling relationship, you have to understand one of the things you're going to have to deal with as you begin to take away problems is that a lot of relationships are built on problems. So one of the things you're going to have to do is you're going to have to be able to take and start, as you add pleasure to their life, you have to be able to connect it with their relationships, with children and with other things, so that they start thinking of things that they can do to make other people feel good. Because you're going to have to trick the people around them into not forcing them back into the same behavior. Because if their relationships are, you know, because when people start walking in and asking the same, you know, like, how are you faring? I mean, there's a semantically loaded statement, you know. Are you holding in there? You know, all of those kind of things are going to be the kind of things, you know. And as people walk, you know, because a lot of them, you know, a lot of people will be programmed for, you know, to ask questions like, you know, are you any less depressed today? Presupposition, you are. And, I mean, that kind of stuff is the stuff that you've got to overcome. And so, there's two powerful mechanisms. One is to make sure that you program people to, instead of trying to get total dynamic results initially, you want to program your clients to start out slow and build it so that it always gets stronger down the timeline. Now, the other thing you want to do is to program new responses to old behaviors in the people around them. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that I do, especially if I have somebody in a coupling relationship, is I begin to take things like putting them in a trance and taking the sound of that person's voice and having it, even if that person is complaining, induce in them strong sexual feelings, you know, and that they begin to get pleasure where they did. Because what will happen is if somebody comes in and starts whining about their day, and they start looking at them with that look in their eye, the whining will stop. Therefore, it will break up the system, you know. And I like, for example, like one of the things I like to do with people is to induce, and this, we'll try this just. It's not really that much fun, but it's a little bit fun, is to be able to go into their future on their timeline, take the new feelings that they have, the ones that are avoiding the unpleasantness, and then to begin to generalize it from the context of where the change came to the context of their life. To say that now that you have good feelings about this, that you feel strong. I mean, even if it's something like just standing up for yourself, like, you know, somebody who gets pushed around by their boss or pushed around by, you know, the guys where they work or something, and they finally get, you know, a strong feeling inside them. Now that we want to do is to take that strong feeling and have it generalized to other, so rather than them becoming absurdive and you know, acting mean where they don't need to translate the strength into a playfulness. So that, you know, to me, that what I'm going to do is have them go out into the future, you know, knock them a day ahead, put them into a trance, and have them see that somebody they live with. And then what I'll do is have them jump back, this is a between time change, jump back over on their timeline to the best feeling they've had with this person, right? And then have them jump forward, and as they jump forward, the minute they pop in, double the intensity of the feeling. Now, a trance is nice. Now, I'll tell you a little secret. Feelings, especially good feelings, have a tendency to be whole-body sensations or part-body sensations that grow into whole-body sensations, a warmth that spreads throughout the whole body. So one of the things I found is that if you anchor at the midline, right, it is, I don't know why, it's a very, very powerful thing. And I mean, I like to create a sliding anchor right here. And because it's a good place for feelings to generate from. It's a nice centrally located place. You know, either that or down here, right at the midline. Maybe a couple, you know, chakras are nice places, you know. I don't know what they're there for, but whatever it is, they're a good place to anchor on. I found that out. You know, you go, you know, like that, and then you go spread. And remember that, especially since you're using hypnosis, that you want to keep in mind to use commands. And commands are where your voice inflection goes down at the end. I found some of you, like when you were saying things, your voice inflection was going up. Remember, your control of your output systems is your tools. And when you want something to be a question, you have your voice inflection go up. When you want it to be a statement, voice inflection goes straight across. But what we're dealing with mostly is commands. And when, you know, because when you do things, when you shove a picture, you know, of the positive stuff in the future, when you shove it into somebody's face, touch them at the midline and go, feel good. Good. Down. Voice inflection down. And they will. And then you go and double it more intensely than you've ever done before now. So that as you feel this good feeling spreading, ING, all over your body and intensifying as it does so, remember using linkage and adding these commands so that you begin to build strong feelings. Then you do things. Then take this feeling and see, you know, your wife doing the things she normally does every morning or every night when you come home. And it will put ideas in your mind. Certainly puts ideas in my mind. You know, take things like saran wrap, whipped cream, and a lazy Susan and see what you come up with. You know, because you want to... It's interesting when you say that to a real conservative. I had this guy from D.C., really conservative guy, a very religious man, whose wife had died. And it had been 18 years since he had been out with anybody else. It's what I call patience. And with him, when I started, you know, talking about, you know, that because there were women he saw every day at work and he'd, like, thought about for 18 years asking them out. And I thought it was about time he got on with it. You know, and I said, well, you know, if you need to motivate yourself, you know, just take a few household objects, you know. At random, you know, just pick a few things out of the refrigerator and let your imagination run wild. Now, and this expression on his face was just like that, you know. And I, you know, I don't know what pictures he was making, but they had to be better than the ones of people rejecting him and being depressed and stuff. That for me, you know, that as you begin to give commands, when you induce trance, then get good feelings, then multiply the feelings, and then have them take the feelings and build images out of those. Because since you're building, once you build stronger feelings than they have most of the time, it's a really good foundation for them to build behaviors, because the behaviors are built out of their own feelings. And then rather than having to see themselves doing things they wouldn't do and then step inside it and see how they'd feel, a lot of times they feel uncomfortable. Whereas if you have them feel good and then generate images from it, the translation is a lot easier. And also, since you start with the normal behavior of other people, not people behaving differently than they're going to, those feelings will automatically come when those good, when those things are there. So the way their children normally act, the way their boss normally treats them, whack, those feelings will be there, and then ideas will pop in your mind. And whether you act on them or not is not the important part. The fact that they're there will make you look and sound differently and therefore be treated differently. It's only a beginning that will lead to wanton and exciting things. Can you feel this now? Spreading? Few of you have wanton imaginations, don't you? See, because the trick is to be able to take the changes that you've now made and really begin to generalize them. Because now that you've got the context and you've just rammed it in, I mean, this is the phase you've been in now, is you've just been beating them with the kind of change that, I mean, you know, it's like, well, you want to feel bad? Feel bad. Go ahead. Do it, do it, do it. Or you could feel good. Feels good to feel good, but you don't get to. And by oscillating back and forth, you know, you're driving them to the point where they go, well, fuck you, I'm going to feel good whether you like it or not. Oh, no, you're not. Oh, yes, I am. When you have them drive, now you want to be able to take that strength and begin to generalize it to other parts of their life. And I mean, and this is not just being nice. This is an essential part of making your life work. Because the strength that you give them, if they're a student, you want them to have strength about studying. You want them to be excited about learning, even from the most boring professor. Squeeze juice out of them. You know, tell them to learn the meta model. There's no easier way to make a professor crazy than to meta model them, you know, in class. Well, how do you know that? You know, especially a poetry class. Think about it when they go, this is what he was really thinking. Well, how do you know that? It's a feeling. Oh, so your feelings are real and mine aren't. You know? Well, I have a PhD. So all PhDs are right. Now, the thing that you have to think about when you're generalizing is this is the point where the information you got initially about their life, about, you know, who do they live with, who do they interact with, who do they talk to? I mean, you know, and if there isn't enough of it, then you make more, because there always could be, you know. This is where you start assigning homework. You send them out on missions. This is where I get them into missions, just like I made Andy in the schizophrenic tape, Captain Kirk, on the Starship Schizophrenia. And gave him tasks to do. I made him Captain Kirk, and he had missions because he had to go to the bank and cash his check. Even for him at the smallest level, I wanted to start changing these things, like going to the mall, you know, and going out in public places to be an adventure. And to me, this is what I, you know, the things that they don't do, you now describe as adventures. And you have that positive anchor. You know where their future is. You have a hand anchor. And anytime they begin to hesitate and go, well, like that, you go back to the other anchor, because you got them now. You go, it could be, because if you start thinking about things that have to do, because it's not enough to get your client over a problem, because if that's all they have in their life, they're bound to go back to it, if that's all that's there. So now you have to start adding new dimensions. You know, I mean, like on the Shyness tape that we made here of Steve and Connie Ray, I mean, even before we were done taping, I was sending the guy off. You must go downstairs, right? And then we couldn't get him back up, remember? It's like, you know, I'm going to finish the tape. He doesn't want to come. He's with these girls, right? I go, well, tell him to get back up here. Right? There's plenty of girls in the world. You know, he got the first two. He's going to stick with them. I got two. I ain't quitting now. There's plenty more where that came from, son. Now, the thing is that to me, I want to begin to program, like even with somebody who's shy, that it's not just that the good feelings have to do with meeting girls for this guy who had trouble meeting women. He could jump off a mountain. He's not afraid to jump off a mountain. He's afraid of women. That one always got me. I mean, when you talk about somebody that feeds you ludicrous stuff in the beginning that you can hammer him with at the end, I want you to think about this, right? You know, because, I mean, I looked at this guy and I said, you, like, jump off of mountains and you're afraid of women, right? And the guy went, yeah. And I go, doesn't that even strike you a little bit as being wild? Because, I mean, I go, jump off a mountain, meet a girl. This is too scary. I'm jumping off the mountain, you know. And I mean, when I started saying this stuff to this guy, he had to laugh, right? You know, it's like, you know, I said, well, it's not my natural tendency. You know, you can jump off a mountain or onto something. What's it going to be? You know, which one is the frightening one? You know, and see, because as I began to hammer him with this, you know, I mean, I still took the feelings that he had of jumping off the mountain and, you know, attached it to, you know, walking across the room to talk to a woman. I'm still going to do that, but it's not just testing your work. It's also exaggerating the choice so that when he's there, he won't fall into the old behaviors. But I also want that to connect with other things. I want it to connect with his work. I want it to connect with everything so that life in general becomes more exhilarating. There's a sense in which every piece of change work you do is the beginning of an overhaul. And the overhaul has to do with turning that grid, because if you can get rid of one fear, see, I mean, if you think about it, most of your clients come in, when they tell you about the fear, you have them think about the picture in their mind and they get scared, which means they're afraid of their own pictures. Pretty weird thought. Here, think about this and scare yourself. And they go, okay. I mean, I love it. They just do it. And I go, do that again. And they go, all right, I have. And I go, make it bigger. All right. Have you scared the shit out of yourself enough? I don't know. You know. Well, here, let me show you. You know, that in essence, I mean, you can't get any sillier than that, to be afraid of your own thoughts. Right? I mean, that once they get to the point where they can look at that picture and instead of being afraid, they go, well, fuck you. Right? That what happens is you now have the beginning of a foundation to begin to deal with all the other fears they have. Right, to be able to overcome them, and more importantly, switch the grid to what else. Even if it's something that feels bad, they can go, well, I want to make this not feel bad, or they can go, here's something else I want to feel good. And when you can get the framework to shift in that way, when you start asking them questions, because I do this, I go, what else in your life would you like to feel good? And if they say, well, you know, I'm really afraid of this, I said, well, what else would you like to feel good? And they go, well, I'd like that to feel good. And I won't do anything until they say it that way. So they start, you know, I go, well, I don't care if that feels bad. I ask what you want to feel good. They go, well, I want that to feel good. And they go, are you sure? And they'll stop and they'll think. And they go, yeah, I think so. And I go, well, do you want it to feel good? And they go, I want it to feel good. And I go, well, then name one other thing you want to feel good. And then I'll make that one feel good. And then they have to start scanning, because I'm training their scanning to aim for what they want in the future, not what was fucked up in the past. And I won't give in at all, and I don't want you to either. I want you now to begin to realize what we're trying to do is to fixate from what we've done a grid that aims into the future, looking for what can feel good. Just because something felt bad in the past, and if the only way they can find something to make feel good is by finding something bad in the past, don't fix it. Until they give you one that it's not that it felt bad, they just like it to feel good for no unadulterated reason. They can just move towards pleasure, right, as opposed to away from pain. And as soon as they find one that they can move towards, you make that one feel really good, and then you anchor the feelings and you attach them to one from the past. And then you go, what else would you like to feel excruciatingly good? So they start taking good feelings and searching for where they want them instead of bad feelings they want to get away from. Now, as you begin to aim people into the future that way, they start looking for how to have a good time and how to make other people feel good. See, especially like, you know, one of the things I always like to teach clients about is I have them notice, you know, things like anchoring. I'll use it covertly, but a lot of them know about it. And then I start thinking about what feelings do they want to anchor in the person they live with. I said, do you want to go up and hug them when they feel bad? Or do you want to induce good feelings in them and then anchor them? Now, I'm not really interested in them anchoring those people. I'm interested in them inducing good feelings in them. Because rather than waiting for the person to treat them well, they need to know they have to act a certain way to be treated well. And this is kind of a sneaky way of getting it, in the sense that I teach them to induce it for the purpose of anchoring. But what they're really learning is to induce it, to have people think about pleasant past memories, or to make overtly suggestions about what would be fun. Find out if the person beams. And by the time they suggest it, most likely they'll end up doing it. It's not suggesting it that doesn't work. I mean, you know, it's the old adage, he who hesitates waits and waits and waits. Those people who ask for a lot may only get part of it, but they get more than those that never ask. And if you can, it's true. Is it now? So what I want you to do is go back to your partner now, and now I want you to start to build in generalizations. Now, there's language patterns that we're going to be using as like else, other, because we want to add. Now, in terms of generalizing, since you've already got fixed positions, right, what you do is you start, and instead of going down here for what else, pick an arbitrary point, zero azimuth, center above, and you go, what else would you like to feel good, right? You want to lead them up to visual constructs, right? And if they have trouble, make suggestions. Okay, now, the sequence I want you to use for this is I want you first to take them back, start a little bit with what you were doing before, like, show, you know, the oscillation, because the oscillation between these two things creates a fractionation where people are extremely receptive to suggestion. Then immediately induce an altered state. And, for example, one of the things I like to do is if I have somebody where I've oscillated them between this and that, then what I like to do is say, just take your hand, hold it up like this, and shut your eyes now, and just relax deeply and feel good. Enjoy that sense of growing pleasure. Take a deep breath and just relax. Feel a good feeling, and then suddenly just double it. Let it spread all the way up your arm. Feel it burn on your fingertips and tingle, and in other places in your body. Let your imagination begin to run away with you in ways that will surprise and delight you as you take that good feeling and lead out into your future and see what else you'd like to feel that good. Numbers of images can run through your mind from here right up to there. That's right. Begin to see, and as you feel those things, I want you to hear a resounding voice from both sides very loudly right from there that goes, I want that. I'm going to ask for that. I'm going to do things to get that. Tell yourself you're going to do it until you're absolutely convinced. And as you're becoming more convinced, that feeling will double again. That's right. Even stronger. And spreading even more. The clearer the images get and the louder the voices, the more convincing the voices get, the better you can feel. Now, I want you to allow this hand to go down only as fast as every single fiber of your soul makes a total commitment to do these things in the near future, and to do them twice as much a week later, and to feel twice as good about it now. And as that hand goes down, your unconscious takes a commitment to make yourself responsible, and for it to be responsible to make sure that you carry out all these suggestions, such that when your hand floats down to your side, you'll know that your unconscious and your conscious mind have aligned themselves utterly and completely to make sure that these don't become tasks, but become the joy of living and noticing how good your future can be now and more and more and more. That's right. Now, these kinds of subtle suggestions are the foundation of taking that altered state now and beginning to really program your future, to begin to amplify those feelings, to begin to put new ideas. Because as you change yourself or change other people, you want to now begin to have full-blown new ideas about how to live. It's not enough to just break an old pattern. I've heard too much about interrupting patterns and not enough about what to do once you do that. There's a certain neurolinguistic programmer with very warm feet who shall remain unnamed who spends a lot of time teaching people to do pattern interrupts, but he doesn't spend much time teaching them to stick in stuff once you do that. And I mean, even the subtlest pattern interrupt, like the induction you just saw me do, where you start this and then you just lift up their hand and go, close your eyes, which people will do. And then immediately when you do that, if you go, feel good, here, let it spread. As long as you're going to interrupt a pattern, give a command. When you do the handshake interrupt, the reason when you do the handshake interrupt, you go, look. When you point across, you go, look. And notice the changing focus of your eyes as you allow your eyes to close, take a deep breath, and drop into a deep trance, is because you're doing the pattern interrupt to give a command. If you don't say anything, nothing happens. You want to be able now to, since you've interrupted a major pattern in their life, to oscillate between these two things, to interrupt, induce trance, and now begin to, and I want you to take more time than I did, to really let them to develop. Again, you want each idea and each step into the future to increase the intensity. People are very good at multiplication in trance. When you say doubling feelings, you can watch them. They go, tsh. You go double it again, they go, tsh. And you should be able to notice those things. Remember, your voice inflection is all important. When you give a command, sound like it's a command. Don't go, and feel better. Doesn't have the impact as feel better, does it? Twice as strong. Not twice as strong? Do you hear the difference? Listen to the tone of your voice and your inflection when you give commands, because otherwise they don't come out like commands. This is not a wimpy thing, this hypnosis. You've got to have your voice. They've always said that you must be monotone, and I hope you've realized that hypnosis is not a monotone. The only reason they were monotone is they found out that if most of these guys were so incongruent, they were going deeper and deeper asleep, which is incongruent. You know, voice goes up and you're saying deeper. It just doesn't have the impact as if you go deeper and deeper and deeper, still going deeper. With every word I utter, you can relax more. That kind of intonation pattern where the words match the sound is certainly going to be more effective. Is it not now? Laughing makes you go into a trance, you know. Makes you feel good all over. Starts at your toes. That's why feet are ticklish. Can you feel that? Now? All right. Now, what I want you to do is to go. Sequence. Remember, go back into the oscillation. You should have hand anchors set up. You rotate it a couple of times and then do some kind of a hand induction. You want the hand because this is the point at which you either want to do it with finger signals, but one of the things you want is as soon as you've amplified their good feelings, have them translate those into other times and places. Especially I want you to run through anything you found out about the fact that they live with other people or where they work. You know, you have to cover home, employment, hobbies, clubs, and close friends. All the potentially inherently helpful people that could fuck up your work. Okay? Relatives, all that kind of stuff you want to run through. They're having good feelings with the other people staying the same, temporarily. And realizing that as you don't have the same problem, I mean, I tell clients straight out in trance, these other people are not going to be used to you feeling so good. So you don't unnerve them when you first see them. You'll only feel this good. But the more you're with them, minute by minute, you'll feel better and better. And you'll notice that so will they. You'll ask yourself now, how can I make them feel better to distract them from my pleasure so they don't want me to go back in pain? Unless you want to feel bad or feel twice as good, which do you want to feel now? And watch, because they'll either go, or they'll go. And when they do, tell them to spread it. And then put it into their future and add it so that you generalize from context. Remember, people sort by place, sort by person, sort by context. If you've been listening, you probably know something about their sorting principles. Oops. If you haven't, do them all. But I mean, the thing is one of the reasons you listen for this stuff is because this tells you how to future pace somebody specifically. So that as you begin, because metaprograms are nice, they work. And this is a way to utilize them to really begin to program things into the future in a way that has a certain kind of dynamic quality to it. That as you align the kinds of hypnotic suggestions you give with the natural processes in this way, what happens is you make the process of generalization that much stronger. Now, okay, you induce trance and you get the unconscious and to give you direct signals to allow the hand to go down only, powerful word only as fast as you solidify these changes and your unconscious is willing to take responsibility to make sure this happens when you see your wife, when you see your relatives, when you see your mother, when you see your boss, as you walk into your place of employment, as you walk into your home, as you walk into the local pub. All of those things you want to be able to become the foundation so that these good feelings mysteriously appear and continue to grow and grow stronger and stronger with every day that goes by. So that each moment your pleasure increases and the ideas about how to enjoy yourself just start flooding into your mind. Now. Okay, then once you've done that, you've done your little trance, then as your hand comes down, what they're doing is programming, because in essence, now what you want to do is to give the biggest and boldest hypnotic suggestions you can for post-hypnotic suggestions about getting this into the future and about proliferating it throughout the rest of their life, and also about inoculating them against the danger of inherently helpful people. Okay?
That is
inoculating them against.
It is the inoculation, right?
It is. Well, yeah, because if you make the same behaviors people normally do, make them feel good rather than guilty, it inoculates them. And, I mean, it's like, when I teach my sales training course, one of the major things I teach them is that salesmen have been taught that what they have to learn is to overcome objections. And I think that's stupid. I don't overcome objections. I inoculate against them. Because, see, if salesmen really use their talent, my sales training course, one of the things I have them do is to make a list of every suggestion they hear. Because there aren't that many. You know, if you're selling cars, you hear a certain set of objections. You're selling houses, you hear a certain set of objections. Since you know what they are, then what you do is that while you're starting to go through your presentation, you go through and you inoculate against the whole list. Or else you do a little crystal ball gazing and find out, you say, and you can do this. You go, well, you know, some people come in here, you know, that, you know, at first they're real excited, but then, you know, the cost, you know, affects them, you know, or the location, or that, you know, you run through the list until you get the unconscious response. And when you get the unconscious response, you build in an inoculation so that later down the road, it wouldn't even occur to them. And, I mean, it makes your selling so much smoother to figure out that rather than overcoming problems, you inoculate against them. So rather than having to overcome the difficulty of other people, you make the fact that it's going to occur fire off positive anchors. So they're inoculated against the danger of other helpful people, especially if they're seeing other clinicians, which is the most dangerous of all. I always get the most intense anchor I can find for ludicrous, right, and attach it to the sound of their therapist's voice, which will cut therapy short, because there's nothing that will ruin your work faster than a well-meaning psychotherapist who takes them back into all the garbage in their life, tells them if they're thinking about good things, they're being resistant and avoiding, uncovering the true pain that you're feeling now. You know, because that's what a lot of therapy is about, you know. It's all focused on your pain and your discomfort. And if you're feeling good, I mean, even at Esalen years ago, one of the things that blew my mind is that if you were authentic, you weren't happy. I mean, it was a trait, you know. You know, I mean, everybody was walking around being authentic. They all looked like they were grim. Grim was the word I would use. And I mean, you know, when I cruised in, you know, I cruised in with a friend. I had a friend that was a resident at Esalen. And I just went down to see him. And, you know, I mean, I went down. I brought another friend of mine that was a musician. We went cruising in, and we were ready to party, man. You know, here we were, you know. And all these people were like, you know, you people don't know who you really are. And I went, well, I know who I really am. You know, I'm somebody that wants to party. That's who I am, man. And they were going, no, you know, if you had discovered your real self, your authentic self. And I went, if my authentic self was anything like you, I'd just as soon not know about it. You know, thank you very much. Pass the wine. And, I mean, they were all walking around. They even had a thing like colloquialisms, like saying, hi, how you doing, was being inauthentic, right? And it never occurred to them that what that is just being friendly, you know. And, you know, if you feel friendly and you say hello, that's as authentic as it gets. You don't have to investigate somebody's whole life before you have breakfast. You can say to them, good morning. That's just being friendly, you know. Put a smile on their face for no reason. There's nothing inauthentic about that. And, you know, their thing was, well, you know, if you really said to somebody, how are you doing today, you know, you should want to sit and listen to the answer. I just want to say hi, put a smile on their face, and be friendly. I don't want to know about their problems. I mean, but they got into this thing where everything got dwelt upon and dragged out instead of making life easier and more convenient. I mean, they could take 5 minutes of unpleasantness from their childhood and drag it out into a 2-week seminar. And I mean, to me, you know, if it only lasted 5 minutes, you should be able to solve it in 10 seconds. At least. I mean, you shouldn't have to go back through it over and over and over again. This is where what you do is you start getting people to go over pleasure, possible pleasures. They don't even have to do them all. They just have to think about them. It's even fun to think about them. See, one of the things about the abolition of guilt that I found out in the flirting class was people thought if they thought about things, they had to do them, right? And it's not true, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, there was a little section I taught one time. I was teaching people how to undress each other with their eyes. I found out people that there were people that didn't know how to do that. And I thought, God, where have they been? And I found out in therapy, where else? You know, it's the first thing I did, the first female therapist I met, I saw her naked and found out if I'd still listen to her, you know. It's really funny. The other thing I loved about Esalen is people took their clothes off and pretended like they weren't naked. I had more fun with that, you know, because, it, you know, these authenticated people that were down there, you know, you get in the big sulfur baths down in the cliffs, sit down there, and you look at somebody and you go, fucking great tits, you know. And suddenly they knew they were naked. I mean, and it was really like the emperor's new clothes. It was like, suddenly they go, oh, you know. It was like, you know, oh, you didn't know you were naked? Well, I knew, but you're not supposed to look, you know. I go, hey, you take your clothes off. I'm going to look. And you might think that's authentic, but all parts of me know better. One part in particular. Oh, the silly things they get people to do. Humans are really, truly strange creatures. They can be a lot of fun. They can get serious. You can get humans serious about anything. It's getting them to have fun that's tough. So go back, get your partner, follow the sequence, and mostly enjoy it. This is where you have to make it sound luscious. You have to use all the tones in your voice, all your behaviors, every expression that you use before they close their eyes. I know some of you gesture when their eyes are closed. It doesn't help as much. But if it helps you to be able to generate the voice tones and the intonation patterns. Now, the other thing is you want to put now sounds in their heads. The more sound you can put in their head at this point, the better. So that, you know, and this is where you pick words. And, you know, semantically loaded words like yum, right? Now, when you want to locate a voice, touch them on the back of the head where you want the voice to come from. Especially if you know something about where the voices are coming from already, put them somewhere else. This is new stuff, not old stuff. We're building new directions for submodalities. You know, you can even I do this. I go a chorus of voices and spread my hands across the back of their head that all yell out in perfect harmony and lewd unison that go, yum. It's the first time, when you haven't been around your wife for 5 minutes or for an hour or for all day, when you hear her voice on the phone or the first word out of her mouth, you hear a chorus of from back behind you that goes, yum, and a certain part of you begins to respond. And I'll let you choose which one and how well it works or not, because if it responds immediately, it will respond for a long time. Just a suggestion. Now, as you add in new voices, music, you know, because, I mean, you know, if somebody comes home after a bad day, opens the door and walks in, and the chorus of voices comes out and goes, yum, and romantic music begins to play in their head, they'll have a tough time being sniveling. You know, they'll be dancing across the room. It makes life a lot more fun. And then you can say, now, you know, do you want to live this way, or do you want to go back to the dental drill and the teeth? It's up to you. Now, I want your unconscious to take responsibility for blaring that voice out. And that if you know how to set up finger signals are good for that. Ask the unconscious if it would be willing to do that. And said yes, and say, do it. Each time. And each, only, every. These are words of generalizations. These are universal quantifiers. Remember them? You guys remember the Meta model? The Milton model? Well, this is where universal quantifiers pay off, because we're looking for universal suggestions here. Okay, go ahead, dive in, about 15 minutes apiece. Meet me back here and have fun with it. I just wanted to ask you, how'd you do?
Really light touch, bringing the auditory around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it sense theater? It's kinesthetic. Mm-hmm. Whoa!
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. That using kinesthetics for auditory lead. See, the thing is that that the cortexes themselves in the brain actually have overlap. The visual cortex overlaps the kinesthetic cortex, and the auditory does. The cortexes actually overlap, and ranging from 20% to 40%, depending upon who the person is. So synesthesia is real. And one of the things about, with images, you know, one of the reasons you place them out in space is that's where they are. But with the sounds, you can set directions. Because, and the nice thing is if you learn to take your hand, if you want the sound to move towards them, right, you put your fingers together and open them up on their head. If you want the sound to go away, you start with your fingers spread and pull your hand off their head, right? When it's away and towards. And when you do that, especially when you do it on the hair, it gives this nice little tingling sensation to it. Kind of adds a little added dimension to it. And given that for most people, you know, large, especially in this country, a large percentage of the population is super visual. And so as you begin to add kinesthetics and you begin to add more auditory, auditory stuff becomes more of a controlling variable. Because people who are super visual can manipulate pictures very easily, but sound controls them more. So as you begin to add these things, it really amplifies their kinesthetics, gives them stronger feelings, which is what they need in order to alter their behavior. It's okay, Charles, relax. Pleasant sounds will blare in your mind. Happy music. Are there any other questions about what we did? Anything else you noticed of interest? Do you feel the same? Do you want to go back? Now, given that we've drilled this thing, I mean, we've done a number of exercises, and I mean, but if you think about it, this kind of stuff can be compressed into a session. There's a difference between what it takes to teach people. Because you don't have to teach your clients everything you know. You're just going to do it to them. Do you have the sense that, because people are always asking this question, which is, for a long time confused me, is about, well, how do you make this stuff last? And the way you make it last is by, instead of using a technique, you build a package out of the different techniques and out of the different patterns. Because there's a difference between a pattern and a technique. And, I mean, patterns are like a language pattern, like universal quantifiers, like presuppositions. A technique is like the phobia thing. But the phobia thing works in relationship to your ability to control the rest of your output channels, to control your syntax, to use language well. Because, I mean, you can do the phobia cure and have it not work. If all your language patterns presuppose that it won't, I mean, you know, and you're combining altered states. What we're doing here is combining all kinds of things, timelines, submodalities, all of these things, and beginning to put together a package where the end result is that it's unfathomable that you could go back the same way. And, I mean, this is the kind of change that lasts. Because I keep finding, like, you know, these stupid researchers that test things. I always love that their control groups are always, 20 sophomore women. I mean, this is the way we test science, right? Some 45-year-old professor just happens to pick 20 co-eds, sophomore co-eds to do his research on. They're science, boy. Weird science, if you ask me. But, like, when they tested VK disassociation for phobias, to begin with, whoever tested it obviously didn't know what they were doing. And when they say there isn't a significant difference, well, the fact they don't get a significant difference is that they don't know how to do it. There's a difference between if I did it and if they do it, because with the mastery of language that I have and the mastery of language you're developing, see, to me, like, Patterns 1 is one of the quintessential books that we ever did, because the construction appendices in there give you the opportunity to learn to master syntax. And in the practitioner course this year, I started with that. I decided that rather than teaching people to ask questions, I wanted them to be able to hear and talk. And then after that, we get around to asking questions. Because I decided if you can't hear, you can't speak. And, if you can't hear, you don't know what question to ask. And this is one of the reasons when people use the meta model, they end up getting stuck on deletion and unspecified verbs, the two least useful patterns in the meta model. Well, that's because every sentence has a deletion in it, and every sentence has an unspecified verb to some degree. So if you start with those things, you'll never get past them. You really need to start at the other end and work your way backwards. That in terms of teaching people to gather information, if you know what kind of information you need and which information to use and which information to store, even thinking about now that as you hear ludicrous things from your clients, realizing that you can take them and here's a chance to use it later on to solidify change. That anchoring isn't something that you anchor. I mean, because people talk about a technique is collapsing anchors. A technique is chaining anchors. But there's much more to it, and there's much more in the sense of the ways in which you can use it, that as you weave these things together in a package, this is where you get profounding change, and not just lasting, but change that's going to generalize and broaden out.